I think there are three great challenges for the Catholic Church around the world, and therefore in Australia as well. They are the secular culture, which Pope Benedict has said at times in some parts of the world seems to be winning over the church culture, and I think certainly that's something we have to deal with in Australia. I think the other great challenge in the Christian world is the Pentecostal movement, which is, like secular culture, another great movement that the church faces and which in some parts of the world has led to a loss of members to Pentecostalism, particularly perhaps in Latin America, but also in Australia. Many Pentecostals are ex-Catholics. And I think the other great movement, the third great movement of the contemporary world that presents a great challenge to the church is Islam. And in some countries of the world, that's a very fraught relationship. That's not true in Australia, but nonetheless, on the religious scene in Australia, Islam emerges, even there where it's a minority religion, emerges as a very strong religious voice in our secular culture. And among Catholics who come from Middle Eastern countries or some countries of Asia or Africa, that interface with Islam is very real when it comes to marriage and so on, even in an Australian culture. So I think if you look at the world map, the three great movements that confront certainly the Western church, but I think the church universal, are secular culture, Islam and Pentecostalism. And how we deal with those movements, I think, will govern how the church survives and flourishes in the future. If we don't learn to deal with them in a positive way and not be overwhelmed by them, then the church of the future will be even more diminished.
You've been involved in ecumenical dialogue for many, many years, haven't you? In particular, the Methodist-Catholic dialogue. Do you see this, what you describe as the Pentecostal movement, as somehow very different from the traditional ecumenical work?
It's vastly different. And therefore, for example, there's a global Christian forum which began to operate some years ago, which brings together World Council of Churches members, the Catholic Church and the Pentecostals and Evangelicals who take no part in most places in ecumenical dialogue or ecumenical work. They don't belong to ecumenical councils, and in fact they have very little sympathy for the notion of ecumenism.
Although the Vatican does have a dialogue with many of these movements now.
Yes, and that they're different to the others, because I think the dialogue with Pentecostals is called a dialogue with some Pentecostals. It's not a dialogue between two churches, as it were. Pentecostalism is more a movement, and I think they would like to call themselves that. And they resist too much institutional framing or shaping even of their own lives, and they don't wish to have institutional encounters. They're interested in sharing an experience of a religious experience with others and sharing that experience with the world. So Pentecostalism is a very, very different body to deal with than Christian churches like the Methodist Church, which I'm engaged in dialogue with.
What do you see, perhaps, as the key to success in this area? There's a lot of work being done, for example, in cooperating on justice, peace, environmental issues. Do you see this, perhaps, as the way forward?
I think Pentecostals tend generally to be less interested in what we call social issues or social justice issues. They're not uninterested in care for the poor, but they're interested in Jesus Christ. They're interested in the scriptures. They're interested in sharing biblical faith with what they see as a starving world. I meet very often of a Friday morning in my own city and pray with Pentecostal and evangelical pastors. They pray in a very spontaneous way, and I tend to pray silently. But they pray for the city, and they attempt to hear what the Spirit is moving them to do for the sake of the city and of sharing Jesus Christ with that city. So they're a very, very different group. But if we don't engage with them, then we're not engaging with a movement that is impacting very, very significantly upon our members.
Do you know what kind of figures there are of the numbers of Pentecostals in Australia?
They claim, you know, hundreds of millions now for the world. And in Australia, they're the fastest growing church, but they're still a smaller church in comparison to ourselves, the Anglicans and the Uniting Church, but they're growing exponentially every year. However, the figures are hard to assess because a Pentecostal pastor friend of mine would say that his major difficulty is holding his parishioners or his congregation members more than a year or two. And I asked him, where do they go? And he said they go sometimes to other Pentecostal churches because they find the music or the preaching more attractive. They might return to another mainstream Christian church, or they go nowhere. People who don't belong anywhere but actually are believers in Jesus Christ and might move in and out a bit. So it's very hard to know what is the constant membership of Pentecostal churches, but they are the fastest growing, and a lot of their members were once Catholics.
It's a huge challenge, as you're saying, for the Catholic Church. How do you think you're doing in responding to this?
I think we have to do a couple of things. One, the Church will always dialogue with everybody, and therefore I'm involved in dialogue on my local level with Pentecostals. They're my friends. I'm very close to them. I feel very warm towards them, and they're warm towards me. And we cooperate in the city on some outreaches to the city. Catholics are as much a part of it as anybody else. But I think we need to ask ourselves the question, and the Pontifical Council always challenges bishops to ask the question of, why would people be attracted elsewhere? What is it that we're not enabling them to find at home that they need to look elsewhere? And it seems to me to lie in the area of the experience of God. I don't think it's enough to say, well, we have to have our music like theirs, or we have to do... That's too thin or too shallow a change. If they're offering people a rich experience of God, and we are not doing that as successfully, because obviously we offer an experience of God through the Word of God, the sacraments, through contemplative prayer, through community and so on. But if people aren't realizing that at home, then they're hungry for God. They'll look elsewhere. So I think the challenge for us is to look at our ecclesial life, our communal life, our liturgical life, and what we offer people by way of a formation in prayer to enable them to be deeply, deeply enriched by the life of Christ, by the power of the Spirit at home.
This is at the heart of the new evangelization.
Absolutely.
That the Pope is calling us to, isn't it?
It is, but it's dealing with it not in vis-a-vis secular culture, where it's most obviously spoken about, and you know, how you reach young people who are captured more by the culture than by God. It's rather saying some of them are captured by God who really were baptized Catholics, but they're captured somewhere else. Why weren't they captured by God at home? And so that's why I say there are these great movements that in different places to different degrees challenge the Church. I don't see them only as a, if you like, a problem to be dealt with. I mean, the Pope Benedict has very beautifully invited us to have a courtyard of the Gentiles for the agnostic, the searcher, the one who is intrigued that there might be something more, and so on. So dialogue, reaching out in a positive way, is always our first method. But we have to be, people like myself, the pastors, we have to be concerned about the people we serve and to say, how can we help them not to be captured by other movements, but to be captured by the movement that has come to us through the Catholic tradition, which is the movement of the Spirit, the gift of Jesus Christ himself.
Do you have any very practical, tangible examples of people or places, communities perhaps, new communities, where this really is working very successfully?
I think there are many of them in Europe. I don't, in my diocese, have any new communities or movements. Small rural dioceses in Australia tend to to miss out on all these gifts. I have a theory, and the people in the movements and the new communities might challenge me on this. I think they're more urban phenomena, that they don't translate as easily into small towns and dispersed populations as these large dioceses in Australia have. But I think the richness of the Catholic tradition is its mystical contemplative richness. And I can think of two Pentecostal pastors who've come to me seeking assistance to move spiritually into contemplation, into retreats, into meditation, into something beyond their praise worship that they offer their people very successfully of a Sunday, the very high intensity music, the powerful preaching, and the powerful experience of community. But they're looking for something that the Catholic tradition specializes in. But if you ask ordinary Catholics, what's one of the great spiritual gifts that you have as a Catholic? They would name the sacraments, and they'd be right. They would perhaps, one hopes, name the Word of God, and they'd be right. But would they name our mystical contemplative tradition? And I think we're selling ourselves short because we're not offering that universally. Why do people go to the Dalai Lama to learn to meditate? In the preface of a book on meditation, the Dalai Lama is quoted as saying, "I tell them to go home because they have it in the Christian tradition." Now, I don't think they know where to look, and that's our failure as bishops, I think.